This episode is actually a little bit of a dream come true for me because I'm interviewing a coworker for the first time. That's what this community is all about, combining faith and work. So today we're meeting my, well, former marketing teammate, Heather Reese. I'm grateful we connected at work and can share our stories now. I think Heather's faith journey is so relatable, you know, rather bumpy, but she never let go of hope. And I'm honored she was so real about becoming a mother. Like, when to trust your gut and when to listen to your husband and go to the hospital. And if you've ever been laid off or you want to prepare for losing your job, just in case, we're sharing our stories from the surprise call to the guidance we want you to have.
Welcome to Rise and Come Alive, a community for Christian businesswomen. This is our place to connect. Together, we'll explore stories of incredible individuality, authentic femininity, and bold revival. I'm Lauren Sawyer, and as my mom would say, I'm your hostess with the mostess. Here's your invitation to open your mind and heart to new words or ideas. Join me on this journey where we'll learn and support each other. It's time to celebrate living vibrant lives of faith.
Well, good morning from the East Coast to the West Coast. Welcome, Heather.
Hello, I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so I'm so glad that we were able to meet working at our last startup together in marketing. And honestly, like I haven't told you this before, but I wanted to share that like really I feel like in one meeting, the Lord just kind of put it on my heart, like be friends with Heather. So it's been so fun getting to become friends with you. And then right as we scheduled a meeting to chat, I was like, yes, my first work friend. You let me know that you were leaving for maternity leave, which I was so happy for you. But I was also like, wow, okay. Hey, this is going great.
Yeah, like what a friendship. So great to talk to you. See you again in 4 months.
Yeah, amazing. So we'll talk about being a new mom in a minute. And then also our working together was also short-lived because we both got laid off. So wanted to talk to that today just because, you know, we're in different places with our journey. But I just thought it could be like a real conversation that we've kind of navigated using our faith, using our professional skills, and help other people just learn.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think there are so many people who are in the same spot as us right now, too, that it's just a helpful experience to share.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So first, before we get into all of these stories, we're going to have our kind of kickoff questions. What is a simple pleasure bringing you joy right now?
So we just got an above ground pool in our backyard, clarifying on the above ground because I am not rich. Like it is so expensive to put an in-ground pool in, but we've spent a lot of like time and money and work on our backyard, and we have like nice turf because I live in the desert. So grass does not live, and like a nice deck and now an above ground pool. And it is like 100 degrees here every day right now. And so I would say just going and sitting in it, because we got one that's not very deep. So you can't really swim, but you can like just sit in it and it comes up to your shoulders and like basking in the sun, but in the water. That is like I'm living for it right now.
I have a very serious question. Do you have like a little like table or ledge next to it where you can like stick a drink and just like sip?
We don't yet, but that is like the next step of what we want to do because the deck comes up like maybe like 10 inches.
Okay.
To like from the pool. So the pool's like in a hole in the middle.
Yes.
And I want to like build a bar around the front part of the pool so that it doesn't look so ugly. And then you have like the little area on the top that you can put food and drink and stuff.
I can see this vision.
Yeah.
That's going to be amazing. Also, it is just as hot in New York and I turn off my AC to do these interviews so it doesn't like hum in the background. So like I could really go for a dip in the pool. That sounds great. Yeah.
So sorry to just, you know, throw that in your face.
Don't feel bad for me. I could edit it out if I had to, but I choose to just suffer up front rather than editing. No, it's really not that bad. What is a habit that helps you rise?
Yeah, so I think, again, ever since I've had my son, I've tried to like make this a priority. It's been a lot easier now that he's on a schedule. But just getting up in the morning, making my breakfast and my coffee, and then I like sit down, finally take a look at my phone. But rather than like scroll through social media or anything like that, I have a few different apps that are like logic games and stuff. And I'm doing that. And I don't know, like I just find it really helpful because it's a really good way to get my brain like moving and thinking and like wake me up in a way that's not mindless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I still have a bad habit of scrolling in the morning. And I feel like it just immediately puts me in lizard brain mode, as they say.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I got to get out of this habit. That's not a habit that helps me rise.
It's hard to not look at your phone. So that's where like the transition was easier for me to just like move into something that was more meaningful than trying to not look at my phone at all, which sounds so bad, but
no, it's super smart. I once tried to replace scrolling with learning another language, and then I realized I didn't like the app I was using, so I might come back to that one.
Yeah.
I would say my habit right now is, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast or not yet, but I'm going to just go with it, is making my bed. I used to not always make my bed in the morning, and it's just a really solid way to be like, I did a thing. I was accountable to myself. And also, I live in a studio, so I don't have to stare at a mess all day. I just like immediately feel more put together.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I used to live in a studio as well, and I had to do it then because you can, like, it's just so there. If it's not, now that I have like a door to my bedroom, I can just close it and ignore it. But you do feel much better when you make your bed, I feel like.
Oh, yeah, it feels great. And then what is a song that is helping you come alive?
Yeah, so this has been my favorite song, I think, ever since it came out, and will just like always be my answer for this type of question. One Republic, I Lived, if you're familiar with that. Like, there's just something about that song, like the beat and the lyrics that just like can lift my mood and make me feel so much better. And like, I don't know, I just love it.
I hear it right in my head, and I can't sing, but I like so badly do I want to like do the chorus right now. But instead, I'll just add it to the Songs That Help You Come Alive playlist that will be linked in this episode description.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do everyone a favor. We won't sing it for you, but please go listen.
Yeah, but I'll make it so accessible. So accessible. Just please have Spotify. My song is In Jesus' Name by Katie Nicole. It talks about like speaking the name of Jesus over people, which I think can be really powerful. And I love sending it to people and just like thinking like, oh, this is kind of my prayer for you. And like if I sing it, like I think how they say like singing can be praying twice. Like when I sing it, I like think of people or even myself if I need it. And that can be just like a good little moment for coming alive.
I love that.
Cool. Thanks. It's going to be on the playlist. Yeah, it's my dream to have like a viral playlist on Spotify. So if everyone could just go save it, that'd be great. No, it's fine. Okay, so since we work together, I feel like this is such a cool opportunity to chat about our faith because you usually don't get to do that in like an office.
Yeah.
But along the ways, like we've kind of been like, oh, like I'll pray for you or whatnot. And so it's like you kind of figure it out after a while. You're like, oh, cool. Like this is a friend who likes Jesus. So I'd be curious to learn a little bit more about what that's looked like for you over the years. And even if you do ever kind of how that does incorporate into your work.
Yeah. I think for me, it's definitely been like a not straight line path for sure. I mean, when I was little, I remember we went to church as like a big family. On my mom's side of the family, like my grandma, all my aunts and uncles, my cousins, all of us. And I loved that church. It was like a super beautiful old church, and it was very meaningful to us because my grandpa, my mom's dad, the last thing that he built as like a carpenter before he got sick, he had leukemia and passed away when I was very little, was actually the altar in that church.
Wow.
And so we just like, it, you know, for my family in particular, like it was just so meaningful. And the church is still there and the altar is still there, but the church that we belong to moved out to like a new building. And it was kind of one of those things where, I don't know if you've had an experience like this, but like it went from like this old, beautiful church and like kind of traditional like sense to a, like it was a gymnasium as well. Like there are basketball hoops and they set up the chairs and they move stuff around. So it was a very different experience. And we still went all the time. But as my grandma got older, she got dementia. And once she was really unable to continue going, it's like it all just kind of fell apart, right? Like no one in my family really went anymore. And I would say that was probably when I was in maybe junior high, high school is when it started to be that way. And to be honest, I haven't really found like a church that I vibe with since then. And I think there's been times where I've really struggled where I'm like, well, you know, if this is all real, like, why is this happening to me? I think, you know, in 2020, obviously a really hard year for everyone, but I lost my grandpa in May, my aunt in June, and a baby in August. And I was like, no, like, if, you know, so that was like a really hard moment for me. Like, why am I being put through this? Like, what have I done like to deserve this? You know, it's just such a hard thing to cope with when you go through so much loss in such a short amount of time. But I think that trying to like remain in that like mindset that, I might cry. I'm so sorry.
My heart's breaking for you a little bit and I'm getting emotional. So it's okay. It's okay.
Trying to remain in that mindset. I think you said it earlier, you know, we were talking about, did you know whether they were a boy or a girl? And like, you'll find out in heaven, like knowing that those babies are gone, but they're not. It's like, that was a really big part. I think for me, that kind of brought me back to it because I just couldn't like fathom the idea either of like, they just didn't exist. And like their souls were just, you know, not anymore. And so, yeah, I don't like actively currently go to a church or anything. I think I would consider myself like very spiritual as well, like very open to other religions. It's weird. I took a Buddhism class in college and I would actually consider myself like a Buddhist Christian, if this makes sense. I don't know how much you know about like Buddhism, but a lot of that is just like very, I don't know, like lit the way that they live life and just trying to like be like a good, like better person and all of that, while also believing in a higher power, because Buddhists obviously like don't have their central God. And I think that it can be hard these days for people, right? I think especially our age and younger, my mom and I were actually just talking about this, because there is like a subset of really, really like deeply religious people in this country that can, I think, kind of scare people off because they aren't like accepting and open in the way that like you're actually supposed to be as a Christian, right? Like Jesus loved everybody. And it was, you know, like, don't like cast the stone of someone else because we're all sinners and all of these things. And I think that there's this subset of people who like don't really have that mentality that are very loud. And it can kind of scare people off. And I think myself included at some points, because when I have struggled with my faith, I think that's been a big part of it. Like, I don't ever want to be like associated with like people who don't care. Like, I just want to be like seen as such a loving person and a person that you can come to be comforted and like confide in and trust in. And I'm never going to judge you, you know, like for anything that you've done or anything that you are as a person. But like, that's why I think podcasts like these are so important too, because like there are also a lot of people who aren't that way.
Yeah. So the first thing that really stood out to me was talking about the beauty of the church to the gymnasium. I feel that in my soul because, for one thing, we went to this chapel way in France on my trip that I just went on, and it was where a saint used to pray, and they covered the beautiful like stone masonry with like wood paneling that was just like flat. And I think we all like felt it in our soul, like there's such a value to beauty that connects us to like a higher power and like gives us fulfillment. And it's like beauty can exist for the sake of beauty, and I think like it does matter. Like, does everything have to be gilded in gold in a church? No. But like, it just like, yeah, there's such like value in like striving for that excellence and like the craftsmanship, like your grandpa had with the altar. Like, there really is something that helps like connect you to your faith when you have like those beautiful symbols really to like meditate on.
Yeah.
Not to like idolize, but to just like kind of bring heaven to earth a little bit is how I think about it.
Yeah. I think like for my family in particular, it felt like a piece of him was still there too, you know? And like, it just felt so symbolic that that was the last thing that he had done before he did get sick. And then it's, like I said, it's not gone. It's still there, but it was taken away from being in that like place of worship for everyone. I think it was a hard adjustment. I mean, I was still really little, so it's something that like I've reflected on as I've gotten older, but I feel like for my grandma and my mom and my aunts, like, I think it was probably a really hard adjustment in that way, because you lose that piece that really feels like you're connecting.
Yeah.
And, you know, to the higher power in that way.
And then when you brought up your grandma, my grandma was like the one who was like, okay, like she couldn't drive. Like, I need someone to take me to church. I need someone to take me to like reconciliation. And I was like, oh my God, I haven't done the confession like for being and being Catholic, like in years. I had to like Google the prayer at the time when I took her in probably like college. And so it's like grandma was really keeping our butts at church. And at the time, like sometimes I was like, oh, I don't want to get up early and do this on Saturday. And she wants to be at church an hour early to get her favorite seat. And it felt like this whole thing, but I really miss it now. One thing I really get out of it is like how much of an influence like one woman can have on the faith of their family.
And it's kind of sad because I don't know, like that just doesn't seem to be a thing these days either. And maybe it's just my family. I could be wrong. And that could be in large part because my family is smaller. Like my parents only had two children, my sister and myself, and neither one of us live near my parents. And then my husband only has one brother as well. And obviously we're not close to England either. So there's just like not that connectedness. But I just feel like it was like such a thing with like our grandma's kind of generation to really be those people too. And I don't know if it kind of stems back to the family and like the center of it. Like, you know, my grandma did work, but she was just like much more around and available, I think. And not to say that that's a bad thing at all. Like, I love being career driven as well as like being a mom. It's definitely a balance trying to find it all. And you know, there's nothing wrong with being a stay-at-home mom. If I could afford it, I probably would. But there's also nothing wrong with like having a career. Mm-hmm. But I think back in the day, like that didn't exist as much. And so they were able, like the grandmas of the world were able to be like a driving force more. I don't know, like there's just a difference in families these days. I don't really know how to explain it.
Yeah, I agree. I think I just think about the fact that like, I want to be that person for my family. Like, I hope someday I can, like, we're far away from this day, but like, how cool would it be to be like, oh, my grandkids are like, yeah, like that's the person who helped me keep growing and like was like strong in their faith. So to me, it's inspiring. And I think like, well, it might not be so popular, but like it obviously can be done.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's not all about just going to church. Like, I know that, you know, everybody has different views on that. And it can be hard to find a place to go. Like, even when I had a family that, you know, like we went to church every week when we were kids, that I remember going on like a pilgrimage type thing. And we're on a bus and everyone's like saying prayers that I've never learned. And I'm like, oh, gosh, like, I don't know this. And so it's like, yeah, like those insecurities definitely creep in where I think it almost like, I don't know, sometimes I feel like it has to be, I don't want it to just be a commitment, but it's like, sometimes I just have to like have a little chat with myself where I'm like, okay, you might not always feel comfortable, but like, let's go try this. But then again, there are times where you're like, no, this just truly isn't a fit. I'm not gonna like make myself do this.
Yeah, definitely. I think too, though, like, I'm a really big believer in that, like, that's not the most important part of it. I think like the way that I view like religion and Christianity and being like a good Christian is so much more about like just the belief and being a good person,
yeah.
You know? And like, if I can't get to church every Sunday, then like, that is not the end of the world. And even if I can't get to church like a single Sunday in an entire year, like as long as you are being like that good, loving, caring person and living the like life and lifestyle of like Christianity. And I keep trying to say Christianity because there are so many obviously different subsets.
Yeah, I feel you.
Where, mm-hmm. you know, you are like just openness and loving and, you know, like helping of others and caring and believing in the higher power. And it's actually funny because I keep finding myself saying that too, because I also don't want to close off other religions. Like, I hate just being like, you know, I am right.
Yeah. If nothing else, there's usually practices to learn from, even if you don't adopt their religion. Yeah. You can admire people.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, and I think too, I mean, I guess like even, you know, Muslim people, like it all does come back to a central God. So you probably can say God and include pretty much everyone. But just, I try to be very inclusive. So just explaining why I'm using some of these words.
Super fair.
But yeah, I don't know. Like to me, like that is the core of it, right? Like I just want to be a good person and like be open and loving and caring to everyone. And you know, try and I guess like try to be the kind of person that Jesus was, with knowing that it's like not attainable. Like no one can be like that good or do that much, but like really like live that lifestyle and just be like loving and caring to everyone. And like that to me is what matters the most.
Yeah, I feel you on the fact that like, okay, I definitely fall more religious on the spectrum, but still want to be like the person that's like, you know, can listen and be a good friend and be there for people. And it's like sometimes people are like, oh, like you're Catholic? And it's like, yeah, because people can get a false sense of like what being religious means. Like as you said, some people take it way too extreme. And it's like, okay, so where I kind of want to fall is like let people know that like you can have this spirituality, you can have faith and like be a good person. That's a thing.
yeah definitely.
So yeah, I love it. Well, thank you for sharing that. I love learning about that. Not something we had time for in weekly six at work.
Yeah, well, especially since our weeks were just so limited.
Yep, that happened. So we've brought up Hayden a little bit. You have a 7-month at home.
Yeah. He is, without sounding cheesy, like just the best thing that's ever happened to me. He is such a good baby. And I genuinely find myself looking at him all the time and just being like, how are you real? How do you exist? And like, how are you mine?
That's awesome.
I get to keep him. I get to keep him. I don't have to take him back.
Yeah, I think keeping him's a good idea.
Like, it's so funny. It's such, I don't know, it's like such a weird thing to say, but that's what I say to my husband all the time. Like, we get to keep him. He's ours.
Yeah. Forever. It's amazing. I know sometimes people talk about like the nerves of like bringing their baby home. They're like, oh my gosh, this is it. Like, were you nervous or were you excited or?
I like honestly wasn't nervous about any of it. Like I was not even nervous for like labor and delivery, which I think is very much so a blessing, because if you go into it with nerves, I think it just makes it that much harder. But in terms of bringing him home, I don't know if I told you this, I must not have, but I had COVID when I gave birth to him.
No, I never knew this.
And I didn't know it. Yeah, I didn't know it until I was in the hospital. Like I went in, my amniotic fluid was leaking and I didn't actually know that it was for sure either. Like TMI, but I thought I was peeing myself.
Well, it's also, it's just like, yeah, how do you not, how would you know if you haven't had a kid before?
Yeah.
It's a lot to learn.
Yeah. But I was like, well, maybe that's not what this is. And I was also very sick. And I've heard that like you can get really sick before you go into labor because your body's just trying to like clear everything. And so we honestly just went to the hospital because I needed some medication. Like I couldn't keep anything down. And they tested it and they told me that it was amniotic fluid. So I was admitted to be induced. And then they like did the standard tests and for like COVID and everything. And they came back in and they're like, so did you know that you have COVID? And I was like, what? No, I don't. But I had been sick for like a couple weeks with just a cough. So I was kind of shocked because I thought like, if that's what this has been, why am I still testing positive? But I was. And so I like hospitals are so dry, right? Mm. Rightfully so. Like they have to be for like germs and everything to not grow as much. But when you have a cough and you're in just a very dry environment, wow, like that was tough. It just like progressively got worse and worse and worse. And so I could not get out of the hospital fast enough, truly. They didn't want to. My son was born at 12:54 in the morning, I think. And so you have to stay for like at least 24 hours. Mm-hmm. But then they obviously do not discharge people at 1 o'clock in the morning. So I had to stay in through the next morning. And then they almost wouldn't let me leave because they gave me an iron pill that made me sick because I hadn't had food. Mm. And the night before, the last thing I ate was chocolate cake. So when I got sick, it was all black. And the nurse thought that it was blood. And so she was like, you can't leave, you can't leave. And I was like, it's just chocolate cake. Like, get me out of here.
Oh boy. Oh no.
I was like, I promise you, this is just cake. Like, please let me leave. Like, I do, even if it's not, I don't care. Like, I just wanted out of there so bad.
I feel like you started out strong as mom. You're like, no, look, I know what's happening here.
Again, this might be, you know, TMI. So I'll say it with...
This is for the real ones. This is for the moms on the pod. Like, let's go.
Okay, so I had a stage 2 tear, which is like not that bad. It's stage 1 through 4, but like obviously still not pleasant.
Still sucks.
And if you think about like coughing and how your body, like your whole body reacts when you do it.
Yeah.
Your pelvic floor like tenses and whatnot. So to just constantly be getting in, I mean, not just a cough, but coughing fits, like 2-3 minute long coughing fits at the hospital. With a brand new like stage 2 tear on my like pelvic floor area was not it. Like I was not here for it. I just wanted to go home. So I was not really nervous at all. But when we got in the car to actually leave, as I said, my husband is from England. So he grew up driving, you know, on the opposite side of the road. And I just don't think he's a very good driver. He knows this. This is not something we're secretive about.
I'm not a good driver either. I accept it.
And so he obviously was driving us home. And so there was a little bit of like anxiety in that. Like, please just like be a good driver today. Like, and I say that he's never gotten us in an accident ever, but
sure,
that was a little scary, like the actual physical putting my brand new baby in a car and driving home. I also think people in California are just wild drivers, so like everybody else on the road is a little bit terrifying. But once we got home, I feel like we just settled into it really well. Like I was really lucky where I wasn't that like nervous or anxious about it. And he's just such a good baby. He makes it so easy.
I love that. And he's finally growing. Because we had, this is what we talked about a lot at work, actually, is that like, he was slow to get on the growth train.
So he was small when he was born. He was under 7 pounds. So he was only like 20th percentile. And then, yeah, we just ran into a lot of issues. We actually think that it was a tongue and lip tie. He just got that released the other week. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, wow.
For all the brand new moms out there, like, first of all, trust your gut, because I knew that he had a lip tie, but I'm not a doctor. So I just like trusted that he didn't because I wasn't told that he did.
Yep.
And he had a lot of issues, like a lot. I would say like a lactation consultant is who diagnosed it for me. Like, make sure you're seeing one. I wish I would have done it sooner, like months and months sooner, because we went through a lot of struggle. I mean, he had very, very severe GERD as well. The worst case that my pediatrician has seen in years. But not being able to seal properly onto like my breast or a bottle just made that worse because he's just intaking air. Mm-hmm. So he got sick a lot. And yeah, it was like when he was 2 months old, his weight gain just like really drastically dropped off. And he, up until probably this last week was classified as moderately malnourished, which is a very hard thing to deal with. And I could not physically feed my child any more than I am. So it was a really rough place to be, to feel like you're doing everything that you can. But to hear someone, a doctor especially, call your child malnourished, like, wow, that was tough.
Yeah, it's a gut punch. Yeah. Especially when you're, you know, yeah, absolutely trying everything you can possibly think of.
It was really hard. And it's just like, I don't want, I say that so like other parents know too, like you're not alone in that. Cause I just felt so much like a failure. Like, why can I not get this to like work for him? It was very hard, but we're luckily seeming to be over the hill for that now and in a good place.
I know. I'm so glad. And I was definitely thinking of you and little baby Hayden when we lost our jobs, and then health insurance became even more important for you.
Yeah. That little thing, I think, is interesting, right? I won't say our company, I won't throw them under the bus or anything, but, I can't say that I was like that attached to the company itself. Right.
That's fair. And honestly, probably healthy. Like, if you're really, really attached to your job, that might not be a good thing.
Yeah, that's fair. I had started in August. So they hired me when I was 20 weeks pregnant. And I had needed a new job because where I was at was also not stable. And I was worried I would get laid off right before I went on maternity leave, which the thought of that was terrifying, because all of a sudden you go from, you know, 4 months being fully paid to not work, to not making anything. I can't even claim, like, I think disability at this point because I'm not working. And so I think that they gave me exactly what I needed in that time. Like, it got me through the maternity leave and back on my feet after that. But mm-hmm. when I got the call to be notified that I was among, what was it, 20 or 25% of our company?
Yeah, it was 20 to 25. It was a lot.
I was really devastated, but not in that I was like so sad to be leaving this company. My first thought was truly just, what am I going to do about health insurance? And it's so funny because I never like thought or cared about it before. I wasn't someone who really used it a lot, but with my son, ever since he was born, like not even his birth itself, that was actually like very cheap, as in I think I somehow didn't pay anything for it. But
God bless.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there, but I'm just like not going to argue it. But he's been to the ER and like a lot of doctors and had a lot of tests since then for the issues that we had discussed. And so I knew, like, okay, well, if I have to go to the ER one singular time without insurance with this child, like it is going to be thousands and thousands of dollars. So I was very worried. And, you know, we were lucky enough to get what are they called? I was going to say compensation package, but that's not it.
Severance.
Mm-hmm. Severance package. Yeah. We were lucky to get a severance package, which included our insurance. And I like that was very helpful. And I think previously, like I would have just been like not that fussed about it, but I really was, because of Hayden and his situation. And like, thank goodness, because, you know, we've talked about this now too. We were supposed to have this conversation, what, 3 weeks ago, but I had to reschedule because I ended up in the hospital having emergency surgery for my gallbladder, which also for new mothers is apparently very like quite mm-hmm. common following like having a baby, because everybody in the hospital kept telling me, you're so young to be in here with gallbladder issues, did you just have a baby?
Yep. Yeah. Like, my mom, why didn't 11 no months one... after having a baby had her gallbladder removed. Yeah, it's super common.
Why? But nobody tells you that. I'm like, do the OBs like not know? I don't know. Like, where is the disconnect? Because I had no idea.
I think there's a running theme that no one really warns you how crazy childbirth is. Like, there's a lot of crazy stuff.
Yeah, it was wild. And like, so for all the new moms out there, when you have a gallbladder attack, it kind of feels like a heart attack. Like, it's kind of like centered in your like sternum area. For me, it was like a deep burning pain that went into my back and then out along my sides. It can be very much so like towards the right side, but I honestly, Lauren, thought that I had...
Did you think it was like horrible heartburn?
I thought that I had like air trapped in like my belly and I just needed to burp. Like, no joke. Because that can be really painful if there's a lot. And so I was like, that has to be what it is.
Well, and also it just sounds like you're just not the type of person to immediately be like, oh my God, everything's wrong. Like, just like a little more chill. Like, well, maybe I'll feel better tomorrow.
So I actually, I first had the issue on a Monday night and I just went to bed. I did say to my husband, I might have to go to the ER if this doesn't stop, but I fell asleep and went to bed. And then it was Wednesday. It happened again and it started at 4 and at like 7:30, my husband finally dragged me to the ER because I did not want to go. I was angry. Like, I was mean in the car on the way there. I was like, this is stupid. Like, I'm fine. They're going to tell me I need to burp and I'm going to be sent home and it's going to be so embarrassing. And then I checked in and no joke, I almost passed out.
Oh.
Like, I could not like stand really because it was so painful at that point. And they took me to triage within like 15 minutes and then immediately sent me back. And that's when I knew that it was not trapped gas and there was like something going on here.
Well, thank God for your husband intervening. I once like tore a ligament in my right ankle in college. This is not the same, but I like fell down the stairs doing laundry because like the stairs were warped. They were like 100 years old and I couldn't catch myself because I was holding the laundry basket. And it was searing pain because I literally tore a ligament, but I was just kind of like, I'll walk it off. And yeah, it was so awkward. Literally to this day, I don't know who this was, but like a tour was coming through of our dorm and literally the tour guy just walks around me, doesn't do anything. And like the kind of dorm mom, like she was not there, but her sister was helping her decorate for like the holidays. And she apparently was an x-ray tech and she like heard me crying because I mean, I tore a ligament in my ankle. And I was like, I'll be fine because I just really didn't want to go to the ER. And she was like, no, like, this is swelling up. Like, we gotta go.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's helpful when somebody else can intervene when you're a little bit stubborn.
Yeah. Well, I think too, like, I luckily had started my new job at this point, which I'm sure we'll get to later, but like,
yeah,
healthcare is not cheap in this country. And, you know, even though my birth really was like, we've spent a lot of money on Hayden's medical bills since then. And I was just thinking, like, I just don't want to pay for this, to be honest. Like, I am very scared to see this bill.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, yeah. Anyone in the US, I feel like that's basically their primary first thing they think of when they think of the ER is like, I do not even want to know what that bill is going to be.
I'm just like pretending that I'm not going to get one for that whole stay, but we'll see what it comes to.
I know. And so I think that's a really good point about preparing for a layoff. I think that's like, we were going to talk about some tips of like how to deal with this. And I think there's several things that are helpful to do before this happens. Like, it's like, it's so common now to be laid off, like a reduction in force, that you just kind of have to act like it's going to happen. So having some kind of idea of what you would do for health insurance is like a good start.
Is it state programs or federal programs? I don't know because I've been fortunate enough to not have to use it. But I think like looking into that and knowing the path that you'll take if you are laid off and you are not offered like severance that includes insurance is really, really smart because it is just one of those things like in an instant, everything can change. It could be, you know, your gallbladder, it could be your appendix bursting. Like, how common is that? It could be stepping on a bad stair and like breaking your ankle or tearing a ligament or a car accident. Like, you know, there are a million things that could happen to you, mm-hmm. To no fault of your own and nothing that you could see coming. And so I think like knowing what you would do in that situation is something that I really, really recommend because I would have just never, I really would have never thought that I would be in a situation to be laid off. But as you said, like, it is so common this year, especially like it is happening to so many people, like accept the fact that like it could happen to you to no fault of your own. Cause I think that was one of the biggest things for me too, was really, really taking on board the fact that like it had nothing to do with me.
Right.
And just being, yeah, like being prepared, and health insurance is a big one because when you don't have a job and you're not getting paid, mm-hmm. to be hit with a medical bill like that, I just couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, so definitely not saying I'm perfect in this, but also like thinking about an emergency fund of being able to pay all of your living expenses for, I would say, like at least 2 months. Like I know that's not feasible for everyone. Best practice is six on hand, but like it's like if you can even get by for 1 or 2 months while you look for a new job, like that's going to be really helpful for not having to go into debt. And so that's definitely a big consideration, like maybe before, not that I'm like this great financial advisor, but you know, like anything you can kind of save before, like before you do any investing and things like that, it's helpful to have just like some cash on hand. So thankfully we had a little bit of a severance, but it's like I even thought about like, okay, I know I don't have the world's best savings right now. It's something I'm working on. So I know I'm going to need to get a freelance job like quickly. I can't just sit around and wait for like a full-time job. Like I'm going to, not that anyone's really sitting around. Everyone we know is applying very hard, but it's like I can't just put all my eggs in that basket. Like let me do the thing that's going to help me at least like keep floating. And so that's what I've done is I started a freelance job, which didn't replace my full-time income, but it's like, okay, I can pay my rent and we'll go from there. So, getting a little creative with income, dog sitting, helping people with resumes, like, okay, we've got a little bit of flex time. What do we do with it?
I did the same thing actually. I got a like freelance just contract role to do a media like evaluation for somebody that I'd worked with in the past, and that was very helpful. I also think like trying to keep those connections so that you can do that, especially in like a marketing role, right, is very helpful because for me too, like there were some people that I'd been seeing on LinkedIn who had unfortunately been out of a job for like 7, 8, 9 months. And I was worried too about just like starting to lose skill sets. And especially like in the digital world, things can change, like new iOS updates, new social media algorithms, like new platform interfaces. And all of a sudden, like you're not the expert that you were anymore. So for me, being able to get like a small little side gig in that capacity as well helps not only financially, but in keeping my skills sharp. And it's something you can add to your resume then and like to your LinkedIn and continue to show that growth. But yeah, I think to your point too, like get creative. Like you said, like, you know, go on Rover, like try and sign up for like DoorDash or Instacart, like do those things. I know, you know, working can take away your unemployment, but without getting like in too much to how much like I made at the job, like unemployment was not any, like it was nothing. It wouldn't have, I mean, luckily I have my husband's income as well. So like he can cover our like base bills. So unemployment would have covered our groceries and stuff. But if I was by myself, it wouldn't have even covered my rent in California. Like, I don't understand how the state government thinks that it's enough what they're offering people. And so you are probably like better off in doing something like that because you can make more.
Yep, that's been my experience. And also, I think it just like helps give you a little bit of like a sense of progress. You're like, okay, I am doing something. I'm keeping my skill set alive instead of just staring at LinkedIn all day, like starting to spiral. Or maybe that's just me.
Well, yeah, and I also think like there is only so much like job applying and job hunting that you can do in a day
True.
before you just are very like tapped out. And I think you start to see like kind of a point of diminishing returns, right? Where
Yeah.
you are like you're mentally hurting yourself to continue. So having other things to do is really important, even if that's not something that's making you money. Like, be sure to just, you know, get out of the house and go on walks. And like, I don't know. For me, I just tried to spend a lot of time with my son. I was like, hey, cool, like a little bit of a longer maternity leave, like sweet. We'd actually had pre-planned trips back to Ohio for a close friend's wedding and then to England to have my son meet all of his family on that side. And it was really stressful because it was like, cool, we still had to like pay for parking at the airport and a dog sitter and all of these things. And now I don't have a job. Like, where is this money coming from? But at the same time, it was so nice to be with our families and not have to work or be stressed about like trying to take more time off when I just was on maternity leave. Cause right. I didn't want to do that. Like I felt bad about coming back and then asking my boss for 2 weeks off to go to England.
Yeah. So when I was in France, I just tried to kind of focus on the fact that like, yeah, obviously this whole job search is waiting for me. Can't do anything about it right now. Like, I'll just be here and be okay with the fact that, like, this is fun. Like, I did, you know, check my email a little bit and try to see if anyone got back to me. So I wasn't, but I put an out of office even on my LinkedIn. That might be a pro feature, but was like, hey, like, I'm traveling the country. Or when I applied for jobs, I gave people the heads up that I would be less available for like 2 weeks, for better or for worse. But you also brought up staying in contact with people. That's been huge. Like the people who are your biggest advocates that believe in you and you love working with them, like add them on LinkedIn. If you have to leave even last minute, like I sent a lot of emails where I copied my personal email and I was like, hey, this is it. I'm out the door. It's been great working with you. Here's my personal info. And so like you really, your reputation is currency. Like you can't burn bridges, even if you're ending a role not the way you hoped.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't throw fit. You just like wrap up. And if all that means is you send a couple notes to people that you want to stay in touch with, then you do that.
Definitely. I mean, never stop networking, right?
For sure.
Like never, never, never. It truly is so important. And it doesn't have to be in person, you know, like that is the great thing about this day and age. Like most of the people that I have in my network who were really helpful in trying to like source jobs or like recommending me to people aren't people that live nearby that I can see, but being able to stay connected with them through not even just like LinkedIn, like honestly, some people I am like connected with on Instagram and Facebook and stuff as well. And mm-hmm. like having that personal connection, I think, like beyond just the business, if you can develop that, you know, like us here now, like that can be so helpful too. Of course, that's not appropriate in every situation, but like where you can, like, mm-hmm. like really develop those relationships, because when people care about you, they'll really try and help.
So true. So that was another tip I was going to say, is literally tell people, like get personal and professional support. Like I think it used to be super taboo to mention it. And now it's kind of like, yep, it happens to everybody. So people kind of hop right over to LinkedIn and make an announcement. I also kind of think do that in your own time. I didn't do like a big announcement, but I DM'd and texted tons of people and I called tons of people. Like I was on the phone all day for like the next 4 days. I'm not even exaggerating. Like I just called one person after the next. And it kind of kept me sane to have something to do. But then also like I was just like broadening my network to be like, I'm only one person. I can only look for a job in so many places. Like if you come across something here of something, please let me know. But nobody can help me if they don't know in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I did both. So yep. I feel you on that. Like I spent a lot of time like reaching out to people as well. And I think too, like, I don't know about you, but I have had a, like just consistently throughout my career, the past few years, a lot of like recruiters messaging me on LinkedIn about roles. And I know like sometimes it can be overwhelming, because for me personally, like I'll go through like 4 weeks where no one reaches out. And then there's a week where it's like five people do. And it can just be a lot to like respond to those people, especially when you're not looking, but you really should build those connections as well. Interestingly, like the job that I took was a recruiter who had reached out like 2 days prior, and I like just hadn't answered yet. And that was lucky too. But mm-hmm. I mean, even if I had and had said, you know, like, oh, like I'm not really looking at this time, like I still could have gone back and been like, hey, actually suddenly I am, like I'm very available now. Mm-hmm. And you know, that is the job that I ended up taking. So even those connections, people that you haven't worked with before, and there was a recruiter on LinkedIn who had reached out about a role before I accepted mine, and we'd connected on it and it didn't end up being a good fit. And she just reached back out with something else as well. So like, I've never met her, but she has continued to like send things through to me. And then, you know, even though now that I have my role, like I can help pass those along to other people that I know are good.
Yep.
The connections of people you've worked with and those connections with recruiters on LinkedIn as well, like just don't just ignore those messages, even when you are in a job that you love that you're not like looking for, like still connect with those people and build those relationships, because you never know when you're going to need them.
Yeah, absolutely. I literally always respond to recruiters and I'll at least say like, oh, not the time, but maybe like, especially if it's a role I would have been interested in, I would have been like, this could be a great fit for me. Like, feel free to think of me for similar roles. So that's always helpful to give them like feedback and if they're actually like coming to you with the right kind of role. Or you could even say like, this isn't the right role, but like, do you have something like this or this level of seniority? And you just never know.
Yeah, they can be so helpful. So that is a huge piece of advice I think I have.
Any other final thoughts of advice?
Yeah, I think this was the biggest one for me too. Like, again, just expect the unexpected and really keep your resume updated. And I know people say that like all the time. This is not new advice, but what I found was I hadn't really done that with our company. And my role within marketing in particular is very performance related, very numbers driven. And I didn't have like any of that data written down to be able to say like, this is what I did at the company. And so I had very similar roles for like the last three jobs on my LinkedIn and on my resume. And for the two before this, I had all of these numbers and all of this data of this great stuff I did. And then for this one, I didn't. And it was actually like a little bit hard for me to speak to. I mean, a big part of it, honestly, I relied on was just like, yeah, I was on maternity leave for like 4 months. So like I did some stuff and then I was gone and then I came back and I was gone again, which is unfortunate. But like it was just a really awkward conversation to have. And had I just really been more thoughtful in that, and in that way too, like you're always having like updated numbers, right? So even if you just decide it's time for you to leave, like you don't have to go digging to find something.
I think like in a perfect world, you make like a monthly task on your calendar that's like pull my numbers. In a perfect world. And also for me, what was important was having portfolio pieces because I do a creative job, so people need to see my editing or my on-camera work. So thankfully, I had just updated my portfolio, so I was like, fine, wipe my computer. But like had I not done that like a week or two prior, I would have been like really scrambling because, you know, high definition footage takes time to transfer. And I mean, I have it on like a private web page, so it's like not, you know, it's still like in a format where no one would be seeing it that wouldn't have originally had access the way it was originally published. But yeah, it's like, thank God, like literally thank God that I had done that a week or two prior. It's like, what do I have to show for 8 months of work?
Yeah, so I think that can be really hard. And because you do think it won't happen to you. And I mean, our company was still hiring. Like that was the sad thing, right? A lot of people were let go that had only just recently joined. And so I think for me, like that's why I kind of didn't see it coming.
It really brings up like the question of having healthy boundaries with your work. And I remember I used to just like always work to whatever time to get things done, even on Friday, sometimes weekends, like many jobs ago. And then in this role, I was like really trying to like take a lot of PTO, like anytime I needed time off, like just figure it out, get my work done, take the time instead of being like, oh, I can't. And also like not working super late if I could help it. And the times I would think, oh, I need to do this on the weekend, I would sit back and think, do I really need to do this on the weekend? So I was really proud of myself for the fact that I set better boundaries because then when this happened, I didn't feel like I lost so much of myself in the process because I didn't give pieces of myself that I didn't want to give.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's so important too. And that was like a really big thing for me in deciding like my next roles was that kind of like work-life balance and prioritization of my family and how I felt because I had two different offers, luckily. I hate like saying that because I don't want it to be like braggy, like, oh, I had two offers. I know there are so many people who don't.
Yeah, and it's not. It's just a fact.
But yeah, I was very like lucky and blessed to have two at the same time. And it was a really hard decision to make because like financially one was better than the other. Not by like a ton, but enough to make like a little bit of a difference. But at the end of the day, like I felt like I would have to invest more of myself in a negative way within that role. And I didn't feel like family and like boundaries of that was their priority. Whereas the company that I went with, like I very much so did. And
yeah,
again, you know, I started and on day three, I went to the hospital. And so then I had like 8 days off and they were so great about it. And like, even this week I was back full time and my boss was just saying like, if you need more time off, like, please take it. Prioritize yourself, your health, and your family first. Like, everything else can and will wait for you. And it just made me feel like I made the right decision, you know? And like,
that's awesome.
When people are looking at roles, I think that's like a big piece of advice for me too, is like, obviously, financially, it has to work for you. Like, if you're not going to make enough money to like pay your bills and ideally save as well, so that if this ever happens again, like, that's, that might not work. But if you can do that with, and you have multiple offers, like really don't just like take the money and run, really think about how it's going to be, because I think having those healthy boundaries is so important. And like you said, like the fact that you didn't feel like you lost, you know, a part of yourself because you had given so much to the company, like that, that is really important as well.
Yeah, I think it's a huge point to make to really check your own personal values. It's part of why I even got into tech, is because I just wanted a more flexible schedule for one thing. And so if I get into a role where I'm interviewing and it sounds like, you know what, we're going to have to be working around the clock. Like I interviewed for a job before many, like a few years ago at this point, and they said, oh, our, you know, standard response time to clients is 20 minutes, even in the evening and weekends. And I was like, whoa, I was like, calls take longer than 20 minutes. This podcast call is taking longer than 20 minutes. Like you can't get anything done with that kind of like response time.
Yeah.
And so I thought like, whoa, I'll never be happy. This isn't how I work. Like I need to have time to focus on things. Like I don't want to have to be at someone's beck and call. And so, yeah, I think you just really have to trust your gut and think about like, what are your values? And does that align with the role in the company? Not so much like, what's the title? 100% like the pay matters, but not 100% in the pay, because you know that can be negotiable too. So at the end of the day, what's probably like not going to change is their values as a company, and it's good to try to find alignment there.
Yeah, and I know it doesn't make it easier because it's not an easy job market right now. Like there are so many people that are searching for jobs, but I don't know, for myself lately, like just happiness in my role is such a big thing to me. And I think becoming a mom has like played such a large part in that, right? Because the time that I spend working is time that I'm not spending with my son in these moments of his life that are so meaningful, because it's going by so fast and he is changing every day. So if I am giving my time to something else, like it needs to be something that I feel like is impactful and something that I feel like matters. And an area that needs to like respect that I am doing that, you know, because it is such a big thing. Mm-hmm. And landing at a place that makes me feel like that, like, honestly, this is the first time, like in a long time, that I've just been like super excited about my role, because I just I feel like I landed in the right place. And I think it kind of ties back to like, you know, the central like theme of this and like the religion aspect, right, as well, because it is that like everything happens for a reason. Like I was so upset about losing the job and like what that would be, like the implications of that financially and with insurance. And it's like, God is like, no, I've got you. Like you weren't, I wasn't happy. Like in our last company, like I didn't love it. You know, I wasn't unhappy, but I didn't love it. And now I feel like I'm in a place that I do. And so it may have been like a little rocky to get there, but I got there, and the picture is like, was bigger than I could see, you know, at the time.
Yeah, he definitely brings good things out of bad things. I will agree with you there.
Yeah.
And also, like, it's interesting, because I'm kind of waiting to hear back about a role. And I think like, I could stress about this all day this whole weekend, but there's no way I'm going to hear till Monday.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, that kind of makes me go back to faith, to be like, okay, like I just have to be faithful in what's in front of me today.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're going to chat, I'm going to edit, you know, like I'm going to do some paperwork. It's just, not thrilling, but like that's what I'm going to do today. And like it needs to be enough until I can actually come back to this. I think the last thing I wanted to leave as a last thought on this episode was you brought up that the big telling difference was one person was trying to fill a role and the other person was specifically interested in working with you. And I think that's so important to look for when you're interviewing is like, are people genuinely interested in who you are and what you bring to the table? Or are they just trying to, you know, fill a role?
It can be like hard to really decipher which it is, because I think at some point the tables do kind of turn and the company and the hiring managers are really trying to sell themselves to you. Especially, I think, like, I don't know, in my head, the scenario of what I think happened with the other company is like there were other candidates and they just like weren't as good. It doesn't mean that I'm like the best fit person in the entire world. It just means like they really wanted this role filled and like nobody else had enough experience, maybe, you know? So like they just wanted me because I was the best option. Whereas the company that I went with, I truly did feel like they wanted me because they really believed in me. And the CEO just made me feel really like special, but not in a love bomby way. I think that's like what you have to look out for, right? Like I felt,
yeah, I think it's like a level of respect.
Yeah, like I felt love bombed by the other one. Like it was almost like too much. I was like, what is like happening? But with the one that I went with, he just really like had some comments that made me just feel very appreciated, and it felt very genuine. And I think that that matters too, because at the end of the day, you know, when layoffs do have to happen, like hard decisions have to be made for sure. But like, if I, you know, was with both these companies 3 years down the road, and I think like maybe layoffs were happening there, like when you are just a person filling a role, I feel like you're more likely to be on that chopping block than when you are a person who like truly is valued for what you do and the experience that you have and what you can bring to the table. Like you're more likely to possibly stay. So it felt like a sense of like job security in that way for the future as well.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing. It's been a pleasure to get to know you better even since, you know, our time crossing paths happens when we make it happen at this point.
Yeah, well, no, I'm so glad you asked. This has been so great to do. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks, Heather.
And thanks, Lauren.
Well, fancy seeing you here. I love your dedication to listening to every second. So I've got an insider tip for you. Sign up for the email list with the link in the description and subscribe to Rise and Come Alive today. I'll drop surprise episodes and you will be the first to know. My way to say thank you.